We're gearing up for another installment of The Optimistic Investor, the podcast that takes the often dry and uncomfortable discussion of money, investing, and retirement planning and makes it palatable, interesting, and relevant. The Optimistic Investor is sponsored by InTrack Investment Management with offices in Burlington and Norwich, Vermont. Stay with us. Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the latest installment of The Optimistic Investor. We're reaching out to you from the great state of Vermont, up here in northern New England, where it's a chilly day in mid-December, and we're rapidly approaching the holidays if we're not already there. And I'm joined today by Myron Sofer, who is the managing partner of InTrack Investment Management. Hi, Myron.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Well, it's a little cold here in Vermont, a little less than 25 degrees, but with the wind chill, a little less than that. But we're used to it here in the Northeast.
So I want to ask you, because we are here to talk about investing and money and the financial climate, as we always do. We're rapidly approaching the end of the year. This is a time when investment advisors and financial planners have tax recommendations for their clients. And I wonder if you have some of those that you'd like to speak to.
Thank you, Dan. Yes, actually getting prepared for year end should start months before the end of the year. We usually start our process in October. But it gives you a chance to methodically go through different items that are of importance to impact end-of-year tax decisions. And I have five or six items I want to go through as things I've seen for my time in this business. And I'm not an accountant or a tax advisor, but I'm finding after over 25 years of experience, I've learned a lot from accountants and other professionals and from my own experiences. But here we are in December, and taxes are coming. One of the most important things for everyone to think about is getting organized for taxes. And you can be very helpful to your tax accountant and other professionals assisting you if you get organized now. Get your shoeboxes together, all of your receipts, your medical deductions, your travel deductions if they're for business use, your entertainment slips if you're entertaining for business purposes. There are many ways that you can make it easier to do your taxes, but start that process now and get organized, especially if you itemize deductions. So as we look at next year, there are some rumors out there that if you make over $400,000, you may have an increase in your taxes going from 37% to 39.6%.
There's also that's not going to be a problem for me, but go ahead.
It's not a problem for most folks, but for top earners, there could be a capital gain increase if they make more than $1 million. They'll go from 20% where it is now to 39.6%. And there could be discussions relative to the estate tax exemption going from 11.58 million downward, perhaps below 4 million. So, you know, there are a lot of things that are going to happen from a legislative standpoint next year. So we just have to be aware that some of these things could be on the horizon. So with that note, number one, you may want to accelerate income in 2020 because it may be a low tax year, and considering what may happen. And if you're looking at trying to shelter money, you should consider a Roth IRA if you're able to contribute to that instrument, because it can be left growing intact for a lifetime, and it's tax-free upon withdrawal. Another thing to consider is timing your compensation. If you're going to be getting a bonus, you may want to take it in 2020 rather than in 2021. On a third note, you may want to inflate your 2020 deductions and your gifting and take advantage of the CARES Act. That rule was promulgated this year because it raised the deductibility of cash contributions from 60% to 100% of adjusted gross income. But you have to be careful here because normally investors are advised to donate appreciated stock to charities rather than cash because it avoids future capital gains. But deductions for stock gifts are limited to 30% of adjusted gross income. So if your goal is to plump deductions, cash gifts may be the best course of action. Item of four, manage your IRA required distribution because under the CARES Act, investors can waive the 2020 required minimum distribution from retirement plans. When it comes to the end of the year, you need to look at tax loss harvesting. So you can take losses against gains. Realized losses can be used to offset realized capital gains, and excess losses can offset up to $3,000 of income. Unused losses can be rolled into future years. A couple more items. Be careful of your investments in mutual funds at the end of the year because typically many mutual funds do have special distributions at the end of the year. And you may be advisable to wait to purchase a mutual fund if that's the case until 2021. But a final note, just get organized. Sometimes people procrastinate way too long and it becomes a panic. April arrives and you're trying to find your paperwork.
And you bring up a good point about that because we're not really even talking about April for a lot of the things you mentioned. Certainly you want to be prepared to have your accountant be able to do your taxes accurately when they're due in April. But a lot of the things that you mentioned are things that need to happen in the calendar year in order for somebody to effectively take advantage of the play.
That's correct.
So which one of the ones that you mentioned are things that really need to be taken care of within the calendar year? And, you know, do people really still have time to do those?
Yes, there's still time to adjust certain items. If you haven't thought about taking gains and or losses prior to the end of the year, you have time to do that. But don't wait for the last moment. And certainly when you look at the situation we're in here on a national basis, hospitals, nonprofits are really hurting in terms of donations. So if there's ever been a year to double down on what you can give, a dollar you give today is worth a lot more than that to folks who really need it, especially those that are helping the underserved in populations that are at risk. So, you know, this is a great year to be generous.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, I personally have felt that way myself recently. I just have, I'm more inclined to feel that way than I am some other times. It just seems like the right way to be right now. Let me ask you about donor-advised funds. Can you speak just a little bit about that? I think a lot of people don't understand what that is, but that is a strategy that you incorporate at times with people at year end.
Yes. You know, you bring up a very good thought because donor advised funds give folks the opportunity to take money, put it into a fund, and there are many different custodians out there that have these funds, and you can fund it and then not necessarily have to donate all of that money at one time. It can be done over a period of time, and you can designate the entity to give the money to. Some of these funds are different than others. Some charitable funds may have restrictions on who you can give that money to. Obviously, 501c3s are the most prevalent. But sure. You have to be careful in terms of how some of these funds are designed. But they're great vehicles for folks to get involved in.
So the basic theory is if you know, let's just say you have $10,000 you plan on donating over the next however many years, you can put that $10,000 into a donor advised fund, take the deduction in the year that you put it into the fund, and then dole it out over time. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. That sounds like a great strategy that I think a lot of people don't know about, and certainly most people who don't work with an investment advisor or financial planner certainly probably would not know about that. I want to shift gears on us a little bit. You know, it's I've noticed, and I'm not sure if you have, but you probably have, people seem to be very emotional. You brought up that it's a great time to think about donating to people in need and organizations that could really use our help. It seems to be a time of high emotion. And I've been thinking a lot about recently, and we've written recently about the connection between people's emotions and how they invest and the correlation between the two. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, this is a great subject. I have discussed the connection between money and families and personalities and historical perspectives that individuals and families have. Those perspectives relative to even childhood experiences, folks that have been raised in difficult environments, and that legacy that the family had relative to either living in poverty or experiencing wants and needs or experiencing not having a great Christmas or groceries on the table every night can influence one's perspective of investing and money. And folks many times do not have the capacity to separate themselves from that past. They tend to be anxious. In fact, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal, and this was done by a Harris poll not too long ago, that when you ask most folks what their thoughts and experiences are with money, 54% expressed anxiety, 52% insecurity, and 48% fear. And typically, folks, from a psychological standpoint, are put into different quadrants. If you look at some of the research and you look at folks that advise in this particular area of the connection between personality and investing, I have four or five different categories I put folks in. I call some folks knights of the round table, others hide in the woods, others fly in the sky, and some folks stay on the beach. So everybody out there can really fit into six or seven different quadrants in terms of their motivations.
By the way, which one do you fit into?
Well, you know, as I told you before, I'm an optimist, and I believe the future is always brighter than it is today. So I'm looking forward to a lot of dynamic changes here in the future, especially as they relate to technology and their impact on all of our lives.
Does that fit into the sit on the beach category?
Well, I probably won't spend too much time on the beach. I'd probably be water skiing or alpine skiing.
Sure. But,
you know, I look at some of my clients, and especially their children, and the influence the parents had on children in terms of their perspectives related to money. Some folks are savers. Some folks are spenders. I tend to tell folks when it comes to investing, they really got to think about simplicity in their lives. And that many folks, by the time they've worked 20, 30 years, still have 401ks and retirement funds in two or three different brokerage firms, several bank accounts, maybe a checking account that they had 30 years ago, which they haven't bothered to delete. And as they get older, we need to tell folks to have simplicity by, you know, paying bills electronically, doing things consistently, and also if they're in their 30s or 40s, to begin to put away money for vacations or special events, and perhaps retirement, by setting up accounts and specifying a specific amount of money to put in those particular funds every month. And you'd be surprised how much $100 can go if you're trying to save that on a weekly basis, or $500 every month over time. It can add up to great savings and a much more secure future, but you need to start early.
Sure. Compounding interest is a beautiful thing.
It is. It is.
You know, I heard recently that there's a dramatic increase in the number of people who are day trading, because they're seeing the stock market and its fantastic growth this year, and they're spending a lot of time at home in front of their computers. And what do you think about the tie between people who have taken up day trading, hopefully with a small amount of their net worth, and emotion, and how those two come into play?
I've actually worked with folks that have been day traders until they got run over by their enthusiasm and their lack of perspective and lack of experience. This especially can impact those folks that are so sophisticated that they do options trading with little or no experience.
Sure.
And I believe that day traders have their place. It's all right, but if you're getting along in age and trying to piece together a retirement where your standard of living can be close to what you're experiencing now, day trading probably isn't a very good idea. I think you need to be a long-term investor in this market. That doesn't mean you exclude day trading. You can do that, but where most people need to spend your time is their time is with their profession. And I tell folks to the most value they have now is their time, and where is their time best spent. I tell them that when it comes to investing, they should work with me. And if they're a physician or an owner of a company very involved in their daily activities, the last thing they need to be doing is day trading and trying to time the market. It's better to have a plan and a process that is tried over many, many years of experience.
Sure. No, that makes perfect sense. And then both parties are working in their respective vocations and what they know how to do best. You know, you and I seem to, when it started back when we first met, we always end up our conversation talking about optimism, and you're always optimistic, and that's one of the things I like about you. As we approach the end of 2020, this has been a difficult year for a lot of people in a lot of ways. What are you optimistic about as we turn the corner and move into 2021?
Well, I'm happy to say that I think we're on the road to addressing the pandemic. It's very interesting for me because prior to being in this business, I worked for some major corporations, and very few money managers spent the early part of their career as I spent it calling on pharmaceutical firms nationwide and in Puerto Rico. So the actual plant that Pfizer's vaccine was distributed from is a plant I've been in many times. It's outside of Kalamazoo, Michigan. And for those who want to know, the little town where it's at begins with a P. But in that town, there's also another company, which starts with a Z. And another one is Stryker. They're in Kalamazoo, Michigan. So the small town environment there has created, three major biomedical device, pharmaceutical juggernauts for all of us to be proud of. And I'm so happy looking at 2021 that many of these firms and the scientists and the researchers that enabled us to be where we are today need to be thanked. And I think as a nation, I hope we find a very special way to thank all of those that have contributed to this scientific breakthrough, which will probably in the annals of time become one of the most important time frames of discovery we've had for centuries.
It's amazing because it typically takes years and years and years for this to happen, and it's happened in about 10 months. So it's quite spectacular. And you're right, this will go down in history, and it'll be interesting as we move into the next few months and see it, how it starts to affect us in many ways, not only with respect to money, which we talk about a lot, but our quality of life and the health of individuals and the health of the country and the ripple effects that that has across all fronts.
Yes, and my final note is the best is yet to come.
Yep. Well, I hope that happens with my Pfizer stock too, but we'll wait and see. So far, it's been a disappointment to me. Okay, Myron, it's been a great pleasure to speak with you again, and I hope you enjoy the holidays. I'll look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Well, thank you, Dan. Happy holiday season to you and your loved ones.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.